This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conkers3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my good colleague at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. How are you doing, Peter?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Not bad. You?
Good, good. Not too bad, mate. In fact, I'm actually in a better place because I discovered from the last podcast that quite a lot of other people have been drinking excessively during lockdown, so I'm not on my own.
Oh, love it.
You know, and a few people have told me about the various different chocolates that they've been buying and stocking up on and eating family-sized chocolate bars as well. So I'm feeling a bit better about life in general as well, mate, because the weather's picking up a little bit. And I think you were talking to me earlier about, you know, letting the wind blow on your one hair on the top of your head.
Yeah, I managed to get out in the Mazda yesterday with the roof down, and that was on my route out to Sainsbury's and my route back. So it was, and there was sunshine. It was just lovely, and yeah, it's things like that that sort of keep you going, isn't it? Really, yeah. That and the nice vanilla cheesecake I had just before we started this podcast.
Well, this is it, mate. You know, booze, chocolate, cake, crisps, yeah, all the naughty stuff, mate. It lifts our spirits, doesn't it?
I was thinking earlier, rather than having my customary cup of tea, one day I should have like a pint of beer here. And then I thought, well, yeah, but we're recording this around 6:20, and that's a bit early in the evening to really be hitting the booze. So I thought, nah, maybe not.
It's not early, mate. If you think about it, you know, back in the day when you used to be working full time or wherever you used to work, you finished at 4 or 5.
I was on booze all day then, mate.
And Fridays were renowned for finishing early on a Friday afternoon, and you're having your first pint at 1:30, 2:30, 3:00.
Oh yeah.
You know, the days of working in offices, mate, and you know, celebrating a Friday afternoon.
Do you know, it's so funny because I think a lot of people who don't work in offices or have never worked in an office won't understand this. But I've been on both sides of the fence. You know, I worked in retail for years where I used to work, you know, Saturdays and Sundays and stuff like that. I couldn't believe it when I went to work in an office. No work gets done on a Friday. That is a fact. Nothing. Zilch. You basically work Monday to Thursday.
Yeah, I can hear that because everyone's already switching off on Friday morning, aren't they?
Yeah.
And some people have started their weekends on a Thursday night and come into work just, you know, not really there. Not present.
I mean, I can imagine, you know, like there's all this talk about the world is going to, you know, be more work from home based and offices aren't needed and whatever. I can see a situation in future where basically no one goes in on a Friday. I mean, our office was like that. When was this? This was like 11, I think, how long have I been retired? About 11 years. About 11 years ago, I was working for Fujitsu. And I never realised, but Fujitsu were actually quite ahead of the game back then. And we were working from home for years, you know, sort of the way that people think is a new thing now. Obviously, we didn't have Zoom because the technology wasn't really that good. But, yeah, we were working from home and stuff. And on a Friday, there was just no one in the office. And quite often on a Monday, people would rock up around sort of like 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, because they've been travelling down from up north where they live. They live up north and they travel down on the train on a Monday morning. And then they go home on Thursday afternoon. So, yeah, it is bizarre. Different world.
It is, mate.
Now, I think I'd rather be doing what I do now.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we've not touched on this, I don't think, Pete, but I think it's important to point out one of the reasons why people do what they do, you know, like we do. And some people have managed to do it in a sense of they're already retired, or some people have opted out of, you know, some people call it the rat race. And I think that's a bit of a naughty way to call it. But, you know, some people have no choice but to work for an employer, and some people are self-employed. Some people have got their own money that's been given to them. We've all come to this from a different angle, and some of us are full-time investors and full-time traders, and some of us are part-time, and some of us just do it around the fringes of our full-time work. We've all come at it from different angles, but I suppose the point I'm trying to say is a lot of the reasons why people invest or trade is because their optimum goal is to be free. And the best quality of life is when you have the freedom of choice to do what you want. It's not necessarily about having that much money or having, you know, that much wealth or becoming a nice millionaire. It's about how much freedom do I have? How much choice do I have as to how much time I spend doing something I don't really want to be doing? I want to do something I want to do. You know, the freedom of choice to be able to do that. I think that's what most people end up why they invest the way they do, to either retire early or to be free. And have the freedom of choice, Pete.
That's such a good point. I think, you know, it is one of those things where, to an extent, my day is dictated partly by the timing of, you know, the natural timing of the markets. So, you know, from when I wake up at about 8 o'clock, the first thing I'm doing is reading RNSs, and I'm probably doing that for the next couple of hours or whatever. And then later in the day, you know, I'm looking at what the markets have done and doing my numbers and looking at charts and all that kind of stuff. So to an extent, my work is dictated by the market, but I do have flexibility in that, you know, like the charting stuff at night, I can do that earlier in the evening, or I can do it in the afternoon, or, you know, whatever. You can mix things around, and it's like you say, it's having that control over your day, over your workload, if you like. You know, quite often I choose to work at the weekend. I probably do more work on a Saturday than I do any other day of the week, which is really weird when you think about it. But that's what I choose to do because it fits my lifestyle.
And you have a choice, Pete.
Definitely. I mean, it's funny because when I took redundancy and effectively retired, you know, 11 years ago, whatever, I don't think I really had that control of my own time as one of the big drivers. Because I remember having four drivers. One of them was that I was being given a nice payout, you know, a reasonable amount. So that was, you know, a nice help. One of them was that I wanted to take my investing and trading to another level. One of them was that I was just having so many health problems that it was just really awkward working. And I just wanted to get that away, you know. And the other reason was I couldn't stand working for that company anymore because I thought the company was nuts and it just drove me mad. So amongst my four reasons, I never really had control of my own time and that as a reason. And yet actually looking at it, I should have had that as a reason, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into it now, but I've been speaking with a good friend of mine of late regarding work, and there's lots of stuff going on. I think a lot of companies are under even more pressure than 11 years ago, Pete, regarding their bottom line. And some of the companies have really embraced looking after staff and ensuring that they're respecting certain boundaries. And other companies simply are not. And one of my other friends actually caught COVID because of his employer. And he works for a charity, Pete, and they didn't safeguard him. They didn't give him the right PPE equipment and sent him into environments where he'd be exposed to clients that would potentially have COVID. And himself, his wife and his daughter all got COVID because he was put into an environment. So there's lots of stuff, Pete. I mean, the worst analogy you can make really is the fact that if you even look at the very best of companies, 80% of the people that work for company X, yeah, of those 80%, vast majority of them will be unhappy, but 80% of the work that's done within that company will be done by 20% of the actual workforce.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're the most productive ones, and the others aren't really there. They're not present. They're not being as productive as they possibly can. You know what I mean? It's difficult. Pete, come on.
On your manager as well. If your individual line manager, you could work for a company that's actually generally pretty brilliant with how it looks after staff, but just because you've got Hitler as your boss, it ain't good, you know?
Ain't good at all. Right, come on. Let's talk about the markets, mate. Let's talk about the markets a little bit. We were here, folks, on the 10th. That's right, 2 weeks ago. And I got the date right. Today is the 24th. or February. Yep. Let me get that right. And it's 6:30 in the in the UK. When we closed on the 10th, Pete, last podcast, the FTSE closed at 6,524.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's been relatively volatile since. We've had a good run for a couple of days after that, after our podcast. It wasn't down to us, folks, you know. And the FTSE went up just sub 6,800 on the 16th, the morning of the 16th, Pete. 6,791-ish, there or thereabouts.
Yeah, that big jump, didn't it? Yeah.
Had a good jump for a variety of different reasons, you know what I mean? And it moved up there. But then we've had a bit of a blip down to Monday's fall, where everyone was concerned about what was going on in America and what was going to happen with what Powell might say and blah, 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 blah. And obviously, with regards to US markets having that invariable sneeze, we had a cough and we were back down to 6,558-ish on the morning of the 22nd, which was this Monday. And today we ended up opening down this morning from yesterday's close of 6,625. We opened down at 6,572 and we closed up 0.5% at 6,658. So that's the volatility again. After a bit of a bounce last night, we opened up down this morning and then finished up this afternoon. It's going to be like that. It's very interesting times with lots of people who were saying that with regards to Brexit and what was going to happen to the UK and what's going to happen to the sterling. FX wise, we were going to go and see parity to the euro. And at the moment, some of our UK stocks are struggling to make headway because they're exporters and get a lot of their revenue in sterling. Sterling's stronger right now. So if you're getting, lots of your revenue in the US dollar, it means that when you're repatriating those revenues back into pounds, you're getting less bang for your buck regarding the dollar being weaker against against the dollar, and also stronger against the euro, etc., etc. So that's one of the reasons why our UK stocks might not be faring as UK stock may be faring as well. But they've had a good move this week, Pete, or starting to, because Boris has been speaking about opening up. So the airline stocks, the restaurants, the bowling alleys, even good old Saga is moving up, and the people that have bought that stock are rejoicing because the stock's moving up a little bit, Pete.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at Saga yesterday because I noticed that it was being talked about a lot on Twitter. And I noticed that it's still in that sort of like, so many stocks are in this thing where they sort of fell from the highs before COVID. They fell in March. And then they've sort of really done these big sideways ranges. And Saga's one of those that's in this big sideways range. And of course, the beauty with that is when they pop out of that range, they're going to do nicely. And one that I mentioned in a blog that I wrote at the weekend was HSBA, the bank. And that one's a great example of that, where it's done that sort of like sideways rangy thing, but it's also done an inverted head and shoulders, which is pretty nice. It had results Tuesday. The market was a little bit wishy-washy on the results, but it didn't get really damaged much. And I noticed today it's up again, and I think it's going to break out very soon. So I think, you know, and if that does, then that HSBC is quite a big chunk of the FTSE 100. So that and other banks, maybe they'll help push the FTSE 100 up.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't do too badly this morning. I mean, considering Lloyd's came out with some mixed news. It was a beat, but you know, not a great beat in a sense of, you know, if you're saying to the market that you've made a huge loss, it's still a loss regardless of whichever way you look at it. But it also said that it was going to return and pay a dividend of I think it was it 0.57 pence or something like that.
I'm looking at the chart now on Lloyd's, and do you know what? It's the same thing again. It's done that tank in March, then it's done this sideways range thing, and I would say it needs to get over about 42p. It's 39.34 now. If it breaks out over 42p, I think it will, by the way, I think that's going to go up nicely. And you know, you can easily see it back up at, I think that's, yes, I'm looking on a tiny phone, you know, on my ADVFN app. And that's going to go up to about 60p pretty quick, I imagine, if it breaks out.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing, I was reading something today from one of the papers, and it was saying that the average person who is historically held Lloyd's shares, the average small investor with 60,000 shares. Now, remember that 60,000, when it was a pound, would be worth £60,000, Pete. Yeah? They're going to be getting 0.57 pence per share. That gives them a dividend of £34.20 dividend on 60,000 shares. Sorry, let me get that right, Pete. Sorry, my eyes are going. 6,000 shares is the average holding. But back in the day, that would be an average of owning 6,000 shares, £6,000 worth of shares. Obviously, that's not the case now when you're talking about 40-odd pence per share. But a dividend of £34. But that's cheered people up somewhat because it's finally paying a dividend. In the cases, you know, going forward, they might pay a bit more. I mean, the interesting thing is obviously the CEO is going. This is his little, you know, waving goodbye, but he's also paying himself because he owns a significant amount of shares, you know. He already owns quite a lot. I'm trying to remember his name, Pete. I always forget it.
Antonio Horta
Osorio. Yeah.
Yeah, I know the guy. I love him because he was brilliant, because he joined Lloyd's back in like 2009, you know, when it was in an absolute state, you know, because of the financial crisis. He joined them. He was like this amazing big hitter from Spain and all this stuff. I don't know if he was from Santander or something. Anyway, this massive big hitter. In he comes, fantastic. Blip went off sick. And it was like, no.
Yeah.
Keeps off sick for ages. I'll never forget that. And that was like one of the maddest things to ever happen ever.
But Pete, I admired him for going off sick at the time.
Yeah, he couldn't
because
help.
For a senior banking finance blah, blah, blah person to say, look, you know what? Whew, I didn't expect it to be this bad. I need some time out. Was basically the first time ever in the city of London that someone says, I'm not dealing very well with this. I need some time to deal with this. And he came back stronger for that. Most people will try and commit to the work and do the work and end up not doing the work because they're struggling with it was mental health and stress, Pete, and anxiety.
Was that what it was?
Yes, that's what it was. And he took the time out. He obviously was doing bits and pieces, you know, and got other people, but he took the time out and he came back and he did what he did. You know, the only concern I've got with all of the story behind him and Lloyd's is that he's been paid £55 million during the time that he's been in charge of the bank, Pete, right?
Incredible.
And the share price has halved. And I'm not saying you shouldn't get your salary, but, you know, that's a lot of money and even since he was involved, the share price has halved. That's a lot of money for someone who's not actually rewarded the shareholders.
It's funny, though, because, you know, it sort of shows how being a big hitter brings its own stresses. I mean, the one that I always think of is, you know, that Alistair Campbell, who, you know, used to be the press officer for Tony Blair and all that stuff. You know, he's had lots of mental health problems. And I think, you know, the weight of expectation and the you know, just sheer pressure on you must be so immense when you're in that level of stratosphere. It's got to be. Not for me, mate. Thank you very much.
It is. I mean, and that's why I do my mindfulness, Pete. That's why I do the psychology stuff that I do, because all the time I'm just trying to make sure that I can keep it together, because there's, you know, I'm trying to deal with so much information. We're all trying to deal with so much information. I've got, you know, if someone said, well, you know, how many jobs do you have, Pete? I would say about a dozen, you know, and part of them, two of those are just being a dad and a husband. You know what I mean? And the other stuff, you know, the charity stuff, the community stuff, the podcasting stuff I'm doing with you, the writing stuff I'm doing with other people. It's just, you're carrying around so much information. You've got to make sure that your synapses are absolutely working and you actually de-stress and have times to get out. You know, and going back to Saga, you've seen people, only the mention of, or, you know, Boris is going to be working on getting us out of lockdown. People started booking holidays already, mate.
That was amazing, wasn't it? Literally, it's almost as he was saying it on the press briefing, you know, the websites were falling over with the amount of traffic of people trying to book holidays. Absolutely. Yeah,
desperate, mate. Desperate to get out of Blighty or desperate to get into the sun somewhere. You know what I mean?
I'm not moaning because I've got OTB shares on the beach and they jumped lovely. So I was like, yeah, okay. You go booking your holidays. I ain't going nowhere.
My only concern, Pete, regarding some stocks out there are the ones that are above where they were in January and February of 2020. They're 20%, 40%, 100% higher than where they were back then.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? Should that be the case regarding that particular stock? You know, some of them also, Pete, have raised money as well. So you've got even more stocks on the books at an even greater price with the expectation that they might manage to get their 2017 revenues and profitability. Not their 2021 profitability that they're hitting their goals and targets for, but what they previously achieved 3 years ago, 4 years ago. So I'm just like, you know what, guys, don't chase these, you know, these stocks are going up too far, too fast, too hard, because they might be ahead of their expectations already.
I was having this chat with my mate Dave. David, he's you can find him on Twitter. He's at AIM Prospector. And I think he's also got his thing called at Blackthorn Focus. And we were having this chat the other day because he was pointing out how loads of these stocks that, you know, have been real, and I'm talking quality stocks here, I'm not talking the sort of more AIM junkie stuff, the quality small caps especially, have had such an incredible run. And a lot of them, when we were talking a couple of days ago, were 20%, 25% off of their highs. And yet still, when you looked at them, the valuations are stretched, even though they've fallen 20-25%. And we just, the conversation went around this sort of idea that something we've mentioned on the podcast before, that it's almost like everyone's lost their valuation discipline. Whereas, you know, 6 years ago, we would have thought something on a forward PE above 24 or whatever was flipping expensive. Now we're happy paying forward PEs of 45 for stuff, and it don't make sense. And I think there's this real danger that if the market readjusts to this and says, well, hang on, we've all been paying too much here for this stuff, then that, you know, really could be difficult. And I think keeping valuation discipline through this current situation will turn out to have been a very wise thing to have done. I'm hoping I've managed to do it on the whole, but I know I have a couple of things that are a bit meaty.
I think that you make an important point there, Pete. And we've seen some of that going on now. And I think a few people are taking some short, sharp intakes of breath. And as I always say on this podcast, you guys all and ladies know that I love my tech. But we've had a really, really good run in the US regarding all the behemoths out there. You know, and they're on extremely high PEs, and some of our own, not even non-tech stocks, are on extremely high PEs. And what we have to be cognizant of is the fact that, you know, they're deemed to be growth stocks, right? So they're given this high PE because they're growing so fast. And what's been left are the stocks that we normally would go for, the value, the slow, you know, toy choices of the world,
that are on
PEs that nobody wants. Nobody wants those stocks. They're boring. You know, you're generating what? You're on PE of what? Not interested. I think going forward, Pete, given where we're at in the cycle and the time frame and what we're looking at, you could see these tech stocks and these really high PE stocks start to slow down and not generate as much share price growth as they have done over the past 3, 4, 5 years. And you've seen that with regards to the tech stocks already, and the Nasdaq not quite performing as good as the Dow Jones or the Russell 2000 or whatever. And if that continues, you're going to see the likes of, you know, everyone's got Scottish Mortgage now, haven't they? The SMT
fund. Yeah, every man's dog's got that.
That's, from, I think it was yesterday's date, it was down 15% from February the 15th. That's a lot, but wow. Not a lot when you consider that it's been up 100 and odd plus in the past 12 months. And that's a fund. The fund's that's up that much, Pete.
Yeah, because of
what it's been invested in. So, you know, if you're heavily invested in tech, which I am, regarding other, you know, variety of different stocks, then be ready for the fact that actually in 2021, 2022, your funds and techie related things may not perform as well as they have done in the past 12 months or the past 2 years, because value will come out at some point and be in favour, and therefore look and consider stocks that aren't on a very IPE, that were the old ones that previously would merit investment. The neglected stocks might have a good run going forward. And I'll tell you about one of the ones that I purchased last year when it was being thrown out with the bathwater in a little while.
Yeah. On that tech stuff, it's interesting because I like what you said just now, that over the last, I mean, over the last few days, the markets have had a bit of a wobble. Now, I've been saying this on Twitter and stuff. It doesn't strike me that a big problem is coming yet. You know, quite often this time of year, around, you know, March, April, we get a wobble. But I just get the sense this year that the situation's slightly different because we're coming out of a really bad situation. I think there's, you know, quite a bit of positivity around. But what it may mean is what you're hinting at, is that we get this sort of rotation where we don't get, you know, so much going into the tech part of the world and more goes into the old boring stuff. And the cyclicals, you know, that are starting to recover, well, have been recovering for a while, but they're going to recover more. But it was interesting, the last few days, that you had like the NASDAQ and that drop in, say, 2.5%, but the Dow might even be up on the same day, just a little bit or something, and that's obviously because of oil and things like that. But that's quite unusual, and maybe that hints that this rotation might be starting. But if you look at the NASDAQ, I mean, it just really looks like it's had a bit of a pullback, and now it's moving up again. And really, that's what I'm seeing on all the indexes. I looked, you know, the FTSE 100. It did a pretty good hammer reversal. I think it was Tuesday, hammer candle reversal kind of thing. And it's risen since that. Well, it must have been Monday or whatever. And it's risen since that. You know, yesterday it did a little bit of a wobble, but today it's up. So it's sort of turning up off that hammer. So that looks pretty nice, really. And I don't get the sense that we're having this big drop just yet. If it comes, it ain't coming immediately now, I don't think.
No, I don't think it will, Pete. I suppose what I always try and do here, and what we try and do, is to make sure that people have a sense of being prepared and getting themselves ready and not getting carried away on valuing things too far ahead, and being prepared to have a look at what if. You know, I think there's too much, unfortunately, on Twitter and across social media about, and always about, the bullish nature of how far this stock could go, how, what price it would be if this happened, and what, you know, this is the reasons why I'm buying this at this price. Well, why not share the bullishness, but also share the bearish nature? Yeah. What are the weaknesses? What could go wrong with this particular scenario, as well as, and give a balance. That's what I'm trying to say, Pete.
Yeah. Oh,
the balance is that SMT has done extremely well. Yeah. And it could do another 100% in this year as well. But what if it doesn't? What if things in the tech space don't go as far and as fast as it has done in the past 12 months? What happens then? And we've seen already that, you know, the American tech stocks have sneezed a little bit, and SMT managed to go down 15% in the space of less than 2 weeks.
It's a big mover, big mover.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, it was interesting because that's one of the things I think I'm pretty sure we hinted at on the last podcast, that things were getting, and you know they still will be, were getting pretty frothy. So you have Bitcoin going absolutely bonkers through the moon. You had all the fiasco with GameStop and all that silliness, and you know, and you've just got so many new retail investors coming into the game who basically haven't got a foggiest idea what they're doing. But it's easy. You just buy stocks. It's dead easy. You know, what's your problem? Just buy stocks. They always go up. And it's like, yeah, right. They always go up until they go down.
This is a major problem, Pete. And it goes back to my good friend, Diana Patterson. That's at Diana E. Patterson on Twitter. And she's been around investing for a little while, doing it slow, methodical, good research, taking the time. And she's not always been a full-time investor, and she wouldn't say she's a full-time investor now, because she's got so many different things that she's got, you know, her fingers in regarding property and looking after all different manner of different things. Now, what she was doing back then was researching a stock and looking to hold a stock, Pete, but she was having to purchase a stock and send a contract note in with a hope that she would get a certain price for it, and then wait for the contract note to be sent back out to her, and then have to repeat the process again, like a 7-day, 3 to 5 day, 7 day window of buying and transacting, and so on and so forth.
But she's done
all these different apps, and you can buy and sell and buy and sell in the matter of 3 or 4 seconds.
Yeah, she used to have to post things in the letter.
Post them in the post. Now, this generation of investors don't know how lucky they've got it, but they've also not got it so lucky, because you know what? They will probably never hold the stock. Yeah, beyond a time frame of 3 years or 5 years or 10 years or 15 years.
Oh, I've been made.
That is where the bulk of the most significant amount of money is made. If you can buy a good stock, Pete, at £3, yeah, and it becomes a stock that's worth in 15 years' time £100, how many trades would you have to do for that to generate that sort of level of money from £5,000 becoming 1.5 million? Yeah.
The stress involved and
the stress involved.
It's mad, yeah. Couldn't agree more. It comes back to what we were saying earlier about people's lives and stuff. It's like, if you're in a full-time job, if you think you can be a successful short-term trader at the same time, it just ain't going to happen. You know, if you're in a full-time, demanding full-time job, you've almost got to be a long-term investor who buys stuff and sits on it and holds it. Because you're just not going to be able to do it otherwise.
You're absolutely spot on, Pete. And I mean, we were talking about something. I want you to expand on this a bit more right now, Pete, about the storytelling element of it and the narrative fallacy. Do you want to hit off on that?
Yeah, no, I love this, because it's called the narrative fallacy, and it's as a psychological thing, and it's this idea that we're really taken in by stories. So. If I said to you, right, buy this stock, XYZ, it's a pound, it's going to go to the moon. You'll be like, yeah, okay, yeah, you know, Pete's pretty reasonable as an investor, but he gets a lot wrong, and I'm not so sure. If I went to you and said, this stock, XYZ, it's going to go to the moon, and the reason it's going to go to the moon is because it's got this new CEO on who's absolutely fantastic, and he's been working in the industry for years, and he really has got all the contacts and stuff. They've got this new non-executive who's a massive private investor, and he always puts loads of money in, and he's massively backing it. They've got this new product coming out that's going to absolutely change things. He's a game changer for the industry. It's absolutely amazing. And so what you're doing is it's like you're creating a story, you're creating a narrative around. Now, the point is, stock XYZ is no better whether I say to you it's going to the moon or whether I tell you the most amazing Rumpelstiltskin, amazing Shakespearean playlet story about it. Stock XYZ is what it is, you know? And what happens is we just get really taken in. The more information we mistake, quantity of information for quality of information, and you're better off having a little bit of quality information than having oodles and oodles and reams of quantity of information that is mostly irrelevant. And there's actually a reason why this happens, because we've evolved this way. You know, you think about it, right? When we were all cavemen, so you know, a couple of weeks ago for some of us. When we were all cavemen, it's like we couldn't read and write because we hadn't invented language. Well, we hadn't invented language, but we hadn't invented how to read and write. And we could just about maybe draw a woolly mammoth on the cave, you know, in a bit of charcoal. that was about the limit of our skills. But what happened was that as language developed and stuff, the only way, we didn't have books, we couldn't write nothing down. So what happened is you become storytellers. So it's like you remember things by stories. Your brain wants to hear stories. It loves stories because it's evolved that way for passing information on. And obviously you see it in tribes and stuff, tribes in, South America, Africa, wherever you see, Inuit tribes or whatever. They all have a great history of storytelling and they're amazing at their memory of stories. Totally different to how we are in the West, because in so-called civilized societies, because we've been writing stuff down for years, we don't need to be such great storytellers now.
This is the beauty of it, Pete, and it works with us, mate, because as humans, storytelling is part of how, as you say, we've passed on history generationally. We've got everything's got an app now and stored and all the rest of it. But stories helps us make sense of the world, doesn't it? And that's why media is, some people say media is controlling the world now. But I think for me, it's about where the narrative starts, because if you get the narrative wrong, it leads us to understand certain things regarding the world and makes us think that we know more than we truly do. And that's, to me, is what narrative fallacy is about. And I think, for people put out the information out there, say that this is the go-to stock, blah 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 blah, and that you see them banging on about this same stock every day, every week, every month, and then more people join in, banging the drum about this stock, and then everybody else starts to believe in it,
enhancing the story.
And I've bought it. Well, you know what, that person on Twitter has got X amount of followers and he's a really well-regarded individual and she's a well-regarded individual, and they're all in this stock until they're not, and then it all goes very quiet and the stock's 50% lower than it was when it started with, so you've got to be very, very careful about what information you listen to, and remember that a lot of the storytelling is being told because people want you to buy that stock.
Yeah, and the more, it's that quantity thing, the more they talk about this stock, the more you get sucked into it. I got caught on Live Company Group, LVCG. I mean, I don't want to go into the ins and outs too much. But
I want you to, Pete. Please do, mate.
I know. What I mean is, it's clearly got corporate governance issues. However you cut it, there is something fundamentally not very well managed in this company. And, I totally fell for the story, Lego bricks. But, it was a classic because I live very near Legoland. So my brain loves the idea that they do Lego brick models because I live around the corner from Legoland and I see how busy Legoland is. They own this thing called Bright Bricks or whatever it is, that makes the models. That's based down in Borden, right, in Hampshire. I used to live in Borden for a while. So straight away, my brain is linking up, Legoland, Borden. Oh my God, this must be the best stock on earth. So it's like, and I start believing the story and I'm reading the story and I'm really susceptible to it because of all these connections and things. And my brain is basically fooling me. And, I've made countless errors with LVCG. I ended up losing 90% on it. I sold out in disgust because I just had enough of the damn thing. And, one of the mistakes I made was that, there were plenty of opportunities along the way where it was going off the rails and I could have sold it and I didn't. I should have sold it and taken a loss when I was down 40% on it or something because it was already going wrong. So I had opportunities to get out. The only thing I did right, I did do something right. The only thing I did right was I knew it was very speculative. I knew it was very high risk. And I only put, less than 0.5% of my portfolio in it. And luckily I didn't add to it. I mean, the idea was I was buying a little bit of it. If it had developed well, I would have added to it and scaled up and built my position. But we never got to that stage because it just turned out to be an absolute train wreck.
It's easily done, it's, mate. And you know, I've got a prime example here where I joined all the dots and ticked all the T's, and everything else was tickety boo. And I did the same thing. The narrative was there, and I fell for the fallacy because I love cybersecurity. I love software. I love digital. I was looking at all these different reasons as to why cyber is the go-to place. I'd already had one cyber tech company being taken over for me previously. So I was like, okay, let me find another one. What? Oh, this one's a tiny little tiddler. This one should do really, really well. You know, all these different reasons as to why this stock would do phenomenally well. So
it's hooking you in, isn't it?
I would say, you know what, Pete, that when it comes to trying to find those stocks that everyone hates or dislikes or whatever, I don't mind that no one else is buying that stock. I don't need to have company. I prefer to travel alone when it comes to buying stocks. I don't want loads of people in that stock. So when I found Shearwater as the company I'm talking about now, folks, right, ticker symbol SWG, when I found that and I looked at the management and I looked at the space they're in, I was like, woohoo, happy days, another winner here, right? So I purchased it on the 31st of July in 2019 at £2.26. And within 6 months or so, fast forward, we get to the new year. We're in the new year. We get to April, blah, 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 blah. Everything's gone really well with the stock, and it's nearer to £3. Happy days. Let's move on. Let's carry on. You know what I mean? And I'm thinking, you know what? I'm doing all right here with this stock. I've called it right again.
Did you buy more?
No.
That was lucky, wasn't it?
No, Pete. I didn't buy more at that particular time when it was going up. Right. Let me finish the story, mate. Let me finish the story.
So it gets
up towards £3. I'm thinking, oh yeah, this is going great. Now, normally, what I would do with a stock that goes into profit quite quickly. Is that if I'm holding it, I'm planning to hold it for a long time, I won't put stop loss in. I'll just, you know, hold a stock and watch it go where it needs to go. But if I'm trading it and I'm not so confident about it, I'll move my stop up to where the break is at. In this case, it would have been 2.26, right? Okay. So I'm not losing any money.
So break
if
even.
If it had gone to something like £3.26, I would have put it at something like £2.50 or £2.60 to at least give myself a nice little return on the time I've held it of 10-20% or so. I didn't do any of that, Pete, because I'm looking to hold this stock. It's going to grow, the revenues are going to come in, the CEO and CFO and the team are going to execute, and we're talking about cybersecurity here, folks. We're now in 2020, and everyone's working from home. So I'm reading the narrative, I'm getting this fallacy, and working from home, more security needed on all the different devices that people are having to be given by their employees to work from home, or the purchasing these laptops themselves. More cybersecurity needed. Shearwater is going to be one of the companies that benefits. Lo and behold, we get COVID, and the revenues doesn't happen. The growth doesn't happen. The company is not really talking to the market. And before we know it, I'm buying more of the stock, which was nearly £3, Pete, in August of last year. £1.65. Right. So more than 20%, nearly 30%. Down from where I first purchased it. Doesn't fit well with my strategy and methodology that I normally have. Error number one, the company's not executing, the share price has rolled over, and you're buying some more.
Yeah.
Right? 2 months later, I'm thinking, Pete, you're not doing this right. Right? 2 months later, I've sold part of my stock at 158 because I'm thinking, something doesn't feel right, Pete. So I watch it again. I'm thinking, come on. They come out with some good news a couple of months back and the share price goes up a little bit. Then it just starts to drift and drift and drift and drift. And I'm thinking, you've got all these other stocks that are doing okay. Why are you holding this stock? Have you got to be proven right about it or what? And then, what was it? Monday, I went, nah, enough.
Yeah.
Right. So having bought it at 226 on the 31st of July in 2019 and at 165 in August of 2020, part sold in October at 158, I exited at just over 133 and took a massive 32% loss overall on the whole thing. And what did I learn? That if the company's not executing, yeah, in an environment where other companies are executing in that same niche.
And where it should be. Yeah, it should be.
Absolutely. Yeah. Don't fall for the fallacy that this company or any company could and should be executing if the others are executing and they're not. Yeah? They should be executing as well as the others. Why aren't they? Something's not quite right here in Chinatown, so get out. But it took me almost a year to do what I should have done in early 2020, Pete. So that's a loss. And there's lessons to be learned, Pete. And this is the beauty of us talking about these sort of things, mate, is that you and I have been in it now 20-odd years, nearly 30 years in my instance, but we're still getting things wrong. And it's about, for me, it's lack of discipline in my regard, in my sense of it, and falling for the narrative that this company is a good company, sound company, good CEO, CFO. But it doesn't matter how good they are and what the projections are, they've still got to execute, Pete.
Yeah, I think it's that thing of having a clear strategy, a clear approach, and then, and clear sort of like rules and tactics, and then having the discipline to apply those rules and tactics. I mean, like I said, LVCG, I completely ballsed it up. But the one thing I did right was I sort of followed the rules of recognizing it was a high-risk position, so I only put a small amount in it. And as a result, it only cost me 0.3% of my portfolio, which is nothing really. And to be honest, for the cost of 0.3% of my portfolio, I probably learned an important lesson. So it was probably, money well spent in reality. Because the other thing, I mean, I was talking to a mate about this the other day. A guy lives over in America. I was talking about him on the DMs. Guy Godois, I think is a name is on the tweets. And, he said to me, and he was so right about it, he said, the thing that put me off LVCG was it was a classic bulletin board stock with everyone talking about it and all the ramping and all the usual stuff. And I knew that, which was probably why I only put a small bit of my portfolio into it. But it's like when you get a stock like that that the bulletin board are all freaking out about, keep away from it because it's going to be trouble.
Yeah. And also goes back to what we always say on here, Pete, is look where the share price has been. Look where it's been historically in the sense of what was the low. Look at what the previous high was. Look at the share price, what it is now. And if it's going up rapidly, there could be a reason why. It could be ramped. And equally, there's numerous people out there now with various different platforms talking about this stock and that stock. And just be mindful, do your own research on it. I can't say that enough. I think I might have to get a bell, like a ding-a-ling-a-ling, like a Pavlov's dog thing. Your own research and make sure that people start to listen, because unfortunately there's going to be stocks out there which people haven't researched, and they're watching the going up stocks going up and then jump on board and then wonder why it's come down again, and they get left holding the baby.
It's funny, I'm talking about that narrative fallacy thing again, this idea of the storytelling. Is there's two great examples at the moment. One of them is Bitcoin, because Bitcoin has got all the story. It's got the fiat currencies are dying. It's got the world's going to go to digital payments. This is going to become the future way that everybody transacts. The best bit about the Bitcoin story is the Satoshi guy. This guy who's this obscure Japanese, Chinese, whatever he is. And he's this sort of, this Asian martial arts expert or something. Do you know what I mean? That's what the sort of... evokes in your brain, so you're like, oh wow, this must be amazing. And nobody knows this mysterious Satoshi guy, and it's like, this is all nuts, you know what I mean? And yet it sucks people in like crazy. So that's a great narrative fallacy one. The other good one, of course, is GameStop. What a brilliant story for a mega pump and dump scheme. You buy a stock, you tell the whole world that we're taking on those nasty, nasty, nasty hedge funds. We can shaft them and stuff, because they're horrible, they're nasty. And, if everybody buys it at some ridiculous inflated price, then we're going to somehow shaft the hedge funds. It's going to be loads of retail investors who got totally caught on that, who've now lost 95% of their money.
I mean, there's not much I can say about that, Pete.
It's a great
Unfortunately,
story, isn't it? Great story.
it's a great story, and you know what? There's going to be lots of investigations going on. I think there's still some going on right now. There'll be more going on in the future as to who was truly behind that and who made the most money. I think some private investors made some significant amount of money, but
Yeah, ones who
I
were
think
in
there's
quite early, yeah.
yeah, I
If
think some
they sold,
I
yeah.
think some institutions probably made far more money on it, and it's about who was behind that narrative fallacy, Pete. Are you with me? Who
Was
started
in
that?
that story,
Yeah.
yeah. Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah, so it's
And then
quite.
the fact you have politicians in America jumping on and saying, "Well, people who haven't got a clue about what they're doing should be allowed to buy this rubbish." But ridiculous, inflated. But it just added to the. I mean, it's almost as if the people who perpetrated the pump and dump scheme couldn't have wished it had gone better.
Absolutely.
Nuts. It's so nuts. Mate, have you got another stock you want to talk about?
I wanted to mention a stock that I've held for a little while now, and that is a because what I'm trying to do, Pete. I think I mentioned this to you a little while back. Is trying and get spend less time investing and just buy some stocks and just leave them alone and all the rest of it. And
Like
I've started this
what you do.
process. Yeah, I've started this process a little while back, and sometimes boring is good. And if you can buy quality stocks and just leave them alone, that's what I try to do when there's when the opportunity arises. Now, one of the stocks I bought last year is called Bunzl. Now,
Oh,
lots of
yeah.
people know this stock, but don't even know that they know this stock. So essentially, what they are is an international distribution company and services company. So most of the supplies of consumable products, such as food packaging, disposable tableware, PPE, and now, all giants and hygiene supplies and all the rest of it. You think about it, all the groceries and all the food service stuff, they're involved in all of that worldwide. There's
They do so much. It's
Yeah, they do so much.
BNZL, isn't it? The
Yeah,
Epic.
BNZL. And now, what attracted me to this company was when I was researching it in 2019, early 2020, was the fact that they bought, and this is going back to the COVID stuff, Pete, right? They'd purchased a PPE distributor, Pete, in China, right? Back in 2017. Back before we knew what PPE was and what it was essential for and how important it was. They weren't thinking about COVID, obviously, in 2017. They just saw this as something that was required in all hospitals and all the rest of it. So they bought this distributor in 2017. And with the COVID stuff going off and PPE being talked about last January, February, March, I saw Bunzl and I thought, I've always fancied that, but I've always thought, you know what, it's just too expensive. Right, so obviously with the March stuff going on, it just got with every other stock got absolutely spanked. Yeah, so it was 20 quid in the February, and it came on offer at around it went down to about 13 quid, Pete. And obviously at that time everyone was panicking and worrying, and I was selling some stocks in February and March and April of last year, and I thought to myself, so I purchased them nearer to 15 quid, 14.96, right? From when it was at 21 quid earlier in the year. And I thought, okay, let me just see what happens with this now. Yeah. Obviously, it's volatile. There's stuff going on, and we had the bounce back from March lows and May and all the rest of it. And it actually has served me quite well. It touched £27 in October of last year. Yeah. And that was partially because they'd went out and bought another PPE distributor, a Danish one called ICM, in November of last year. It's currently sitting at £22.60 today. So it's doubled, it's dropped off a little bit, but it's just another high quality stock, which I think for me is better than chasing a smaller Minnow stock. It's a FTSE 100 company. It's worth 7.5 billion plus on in the FTSE. Global sort of company. Pays a small dividend, and it's one of them I can sleep at night. You know, if we get another massive issue, of course the share price could go back to 13, 14, 15 quid again. But it's one less stock that I can just buy, forget about, and hopefully in X amount of years' time, it keeps turning out a reasonable return. So, yeah, so that's Bunzl. Have seen about, but probably don't even know that they know about it.
I really like Bunzl, and I'm looking now, it's saying historically on the ADVFN app, it's saying historic dividend yield 2.2%, you know, which isn't much, but it's got a really good record of growing that dividend. So you may be getting 2.2% today, but if you've still got this in 6-7 years' time, that's going to be up near 3.5, maybe higher. It says PE ratio 21.5 historically, so it's probably on a forward PE of 22, 23, whatever. You know, which isn't ridiculous when it's you not, think it's a quality not,
it's
stock. Bad,
it's one of those. Great, you know.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the chart, I would say looking at a year's chart, it looks like it might be sort of rolling over a little bit, so it might drop down a little bit more, but. What I would do myself, if I was after something like Bunzl, I'd be buying a bit of it probably quite soon, and then I'd be buying more if it drops down that little bit lower. If I can see where it's going to drop to and it's just doing a normal thing with no problems. Looking at the chart much closer, I've noticed, just like so many things, you know, in these markets at the moment, it had a bit of a drop. And it's put in a hammer candle on, that must be, I think it must be Monday or Tuesday, it did a hammer. And it's done another sort of hammer today. And it looks to me like that wants to turn up. I bet you in the short term it will rise off that.
Well, I don't know, Pete, I don't know about that. I mean, I'm hoping it does, but I'm happy to hold it because we go back to the total returns again, folks. So this is the dividend that it pays, which Peter said is about 2%-ish. And the total and the actual capital gains on it, the actual growth of the actual share price. I'm looking at when I was looking at it, and now I'm looking at it again, fresh. 10-year annualized total returns, 13.48%, Pete. Five-year annualized, 5.5. 3-year annualized, 6.2. In the last year, it's up 18%, 18.6%. So I'm happy to look for 7 to 10% totally annualized for the next 3 to 4 or 5 years, if it can manage that, and I'm hoping that it will. But who knows, mate? You know, on a 6-month chart, it's at the bottom of its 6-month chart. But I'm not bothered because I bought in at 15-ish pounds there or thereabouts. So at the minute, I'm just wanting to just get that 7 to 10% and just leave it alone. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to worry about waking up to a tiddler stock being up or down 20%, because that shouldn't happen, you know, with a stock like that, a FTSE 100 company. But who knows?
Yeah, exactly. They, you know, they can do anything. But I think you've got a good one there. I like it. Definitely. But so, mate, should I throw some stocks in?
Go for it, mate. Go for it.
What I'll do is I'll do a few fairly quickly because I've noticed a few things in recent days. First one, Sylvania Platinum, SLP, yeah? Okay. I just want to raise, right, that I'm seeing this being talked about everywhere. Every man and his dog is in Sylvania Platinum. Brilliant, and, you know, it's done well, whatever. The point I want to make is I see it all the time. I see people quoting PE ratios and dividends and all sorts of sort of financial ratios and that. The thing you must never forget with these commodity stocks is that you are basing those numbers on a price for platinum. And the price for platinum is incredibly volatile. So your assumptions and the assumptions of the broker, which say it's on a forward PE of 8, could be complete and utter nonsense when it comes to reality. And people need to bear this in mind. I think people just don't understand this risk. And, you know, this is one of the reasons I'm not mad on miners and oil and all the rest of it these days. I used to be more, but I'm not so much these days, because I realise that the underlying commodity on which you base your valuations is just so unpredictable, and it can swing about so wildly. So just be really careful if you're holding that stock.
No, that's a good point, Pete.
Any thoughts on that, mate?
I think you're right.
Another one I'll mention quickly.
I think you're right, Pete. I think you have to base it, I don't want to say base it on reality, but you have to be, you know, the fact that these prices fluctuate a lot. You know, it was only a couple of months ago that platinum was completely unloved, you know, and the platinum price has increased a lot in the past couple of months. Will it continue to go higher and not be so, you know, distant from gold? I don't know. But just be mindful of what Pete said there. It's come a long way, SLP, hasn't it? From what I recall, Pete, as well.
Yeah,
from its lows.
Yeah. So
yeah, it's one of them. And this goes back, Pete, to people and some individuals. They like to be in a stock which everyone else is.
Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant.
Holds. You know. So you're looking back to last March, April time, 18th of March. It was 27 pence. And it's recently touched the high of £1.19. Now, should you be buying at £1.19 with a view to it going up to £2? I don't know. The share price is up 100% in the past 12 months. So you do the metrics and do the maths, but I'd sooner be buying when no one else was buying it at 27, 28, 29, 30, 40 pence even. I don't like buying things at 52-week highs. That's just the way that I am. Maybe I'm a cheapskate. But when people are then, lots of people talk about it at multi-year highs, I'm usually the person going, I'm not buying that. I won't be buying that. But other people will buy that and do well out of it, you know, because they're looking at it in a sense of 3 years, 5 years beyond. And they're looking at me and going, Pete, you could have bought that at 114 and it's now £2.40. I'll go, you know what? Well done. It's up 100%. But I'm buying a stock here, which no one wants. And it's currently at a 5 year low. I just want it to get to a 1 year low and it'd be up 300%. That's where I prefer to do my digging and my mining, you know?
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. And, you know, if I'd been buying, if I was absolutely amazing and been buying Sylvania Platinum at 30p, 40p, 50p, then I'd be thinking now, my risk is really increasing on this. I'm just going to slice a bit off. And that's the way I'd be thinking about it. But, you know, people, it's each to his own. Everyone's got to do their own thing, haven't they?
But it goes back to what we were saying earlier, Pete. You know, you've got a stock here, and I'm looking at the charts here now, at 63 pence in February, okay, of last year. Okay. It's at 32 pence on March the 14th. Yeah. And now it's at 114 or thereabouts. What's happened in the past 12 months to make it worth 100% more than what it was worth last February?
Platinum price went up.
Has it gone up 100%, Pete?
Probably more. Who knows? But yeah.
I don't think it has. Platinum hasn't gone up 100%, Pete. The profitability hasn't. The profit hasn't gone up 100%. So it's a case of everybody wants to be in that stock now because it's doing better than it was last year. But the point I'm trying to make is, have things increased that much that it should be warranted up being 100% from where it was in February? But this is what happens when lots of people get into the same stocks. The price will go ahead of itself, you know. So it's about being careful, people. And if this rolls over, those people buying in at above a pound will be going, oh my gosh, I wish I hadn't bought it in now. I wish I hadn't fallen for that negative fallacy. But equally, they could carry on and platinum prices could go higher and they could come up with better results and, you know, and increase the share price. Who knows, Pete? We don't know what the future holds, you know. Yeah. And that famous
we
saying, you know, that
less about what future commodity prices are going to be.
Yeah,
and you know, don't fall for this idea that analysts know what future commodity prices are going to be, because they really don't.
They don't.
Another one I'll mention quickly is Begbie's Trainer. I think we might have mentioned it on a podcast before. BEG. Yeah. I don't hold it. They had results yesterday. I thought they were pretty good. And the thing I liked about it was that I think it said they were ahead of expectations. No, it said they were going to comfortably meet expectations. And it sort of gave you the vibe that they would probably beat expectations. And they had in there, they said the adjusted EBITDA, okay, be careful, it's adjusted EBITDA, would be 10, 11 million or something like that. Now, the market cap is about 130 million, so it's on a forward PE for the current year results of probably about 12 or 13. So that looks pretty good value to me. It does, you know, insolvency work and stuff, so it's absolutely in the sweet spot. I mean, I just think that could be a really good one.
Okie dokie.
Do you want another quick one?
Yeah, I wanted to touch on, there's lots of talk at the minute regarding...
No, I've seen the time.
Yeah, I have seen the time, Pete. Yeah.
Carry on, mate. But you carry on with whatever you want to cover.
Right. I was going to touch on a company called CM Life Sciences, Pete. Kathy Woods is the go-to person at the minute on all things tech stock, and she runs ARK Investments in the US, and she's backing this particular company.
What's the code?
The code is CMLF, and it's essentially a special acquisition vehicle, or known in the US as a SPAC.
SPAC.
Yeah.
It's listed and it's a SPAC.
Yeah, so it's listed in the US. Yeah. So it's a life sciences focused special purpose acquisition company founded in July 2020, aiming to deploy £443 million. And it's announced that it's intended to acquire and has acquired Sema4, a promising disruptive AI driven genomic clinical data platform. Now, genomic is red hot in the US at the minute regarding stocks. So that stock is going to be flying. So something to investigate and to watch. It's got all the sweet things going on: AI, genomics, and Kathy Wood of ARK backing it. So with regards to people that are buying US stocks, it's something to investigate and also be mindful about the issue of the US dollar being weaker at the moment in comparison to the UK sterling. So there might be some FX issues going forward for people as well who buy and hold significant number of stocks in dollar accounts. When they do come to sell them, they might be not generating as much as they thought by 2 or 3 or 5% because sterling is stronger at the minute.
Yeah, that sounds interesting, mate. Can I just mention very quickly, there's the budget on, is it the 3rd of March or something? I think it's basically next week. Yeah, we're recording this on the 24th of February. So it's basically next week, the budget. The thing that it looks like he's going to talk about is stamp duty on houses, extending it 3 months. So, that, you know, it's good for houses. And I think a lot of the housing stocks still look quite good value, really.
Yeah, I mean, Pete, this is the thing with regards to the situation. One of the biggest drivers of the UK economy, one of them, is property sales, mortgages, buying and selling property, commercial, blah 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 blah. So you know, they need to generate, and they need to, you know, put some coffers back in and create some revenue for the government. And you know, I put a tweet out regarding it today in relation to ULS, which I own, and that was up this morning. Quite significantly because the stamp duty holiday might be extended. We don't know if that's going to be the case. It's all speculation, but that was up near 7% at one point this morning.
Wow.
I'm not sure quite where it finished, but essentially what Rightmove were saying was that if the stamp duty holiday is extended even just to June, which essentially is another 3 months, the volume of transactions could be 160,000, you know. So you know, whether they extend it or not, I mean, I'm sure he's got far more things to talk about other than stamp duty, but that's just one of the things that could generate a lot of pull. The house builders and all the people connected with the housing industry, construction companies, could do significantly better if it is extended, but he may not, you know, and that's the risk that people take.
I've just noticed ULS was up 4.7%, but it's really interesting chart. Yeah. Because it's one of those where it's done that sort of dip and it's sort of been bumbling around the bottom. And it looks to me it needs to break out above about sort of 92 pence, something like that. And obviously, if it gets over a pound, I think you'll see it go higher. And the interesting thing with that one is that ULS Technology does a lot of transaction processing of mortgages and house, you know, the paperwork and stuff for house transactions. So it's absolutely in the sweet spot if it does get extended.
Yeah, it's an e-conveyancing company, Pete. So they try and do everything they possibly can online, you know.
That's brilliant.
So they try and help with that regard. And so they've done quite well out of lockdown. Other companies haven't. But, you know, we'll see what happens with it, mate.
I hold in the house building scene of things, and I think it still looks pretty damn attractive, is Vistry, VTY.
Yeah.
That's another one that's done that sideways, grinding along the bottom kind of thing. And it needs to get over £10. What, 1,000p, £10. If it can break out above that, we'll see that run up nicely. So yeah, I like VTY. I think that's cool.
Okie dokie. We're 1 hour and 10 minutes in. I want you to say to everybody, ladies and gents, wherever you are around the world, thank you ever so much for your continued support. Pete and I have been quite taken aback, really, by the feedback we've had over the past 2 years plus. But it's been phenomenal. But more so in the past 2 months, really, given what the stresses and strains that people are going through, the mindfulness conversations that we've had about, you know, well-being, mental health, looking after each other, the community stuff. You know, you guys have really responded to it really, really, really well, and have been very, very kind with your remarks and communications to us. And equally, I want to thank everybody that's thus far has supported the Memphis charity that Pete and I are supporting regarding disabled children. You know, some of you have gone out and donated quite significantly, and that's not what it's about, really. It's about everybody considering making a donation, and no donation is too small, you know. So depending on your circumstances, if you can donate $1 or £1, that's enough. You know, we're just trying to just generate some goodwill here, and do some good for the people that aren't, you know, in a really, really good place at the minute. And hopefully they'll be in a better place if the schools in the UK open on the 8th, as what we've been told, and they're able to go in safely and be amongst their peers. That'll be phenomenal. But Pete and I'll be running this Twin Peaks challenge going forward for up until December, if not January of next year. So you can find us at the Just Giving page, fundraising Twin Peaks challenge, and make a donation there if you feel you want to. But to everyone that's done that so far, thank you ever so much. For all the people that have listened to us so far and subscribed, you know, you're on YouTube, people are subscribing on YouTube, brilliant, thank you ever so much. Whatever platform you're using, subscribe to the platform. You'll get the information, you'll get the podcast, you won't miss any. And, you know, just keep on being the kind ladies and gents that you are. You know, we're blessed to have you listening to us, really.
We've noticed that people who subscribe, and it's free to subscribe, if you subscribe on your podcast channel, you actually get to know the new podcast is out quite a long time before everybody else does. We've noticed that, you know, we're getting loads of people listen before we've even announced that we've done a new podcast. So that's quite bizarre. I just want to say very quickly, on the Memphis charity, if you go to my website, the www.wheeliedealer2.weebly.com, .co.uk, sorry. On the Twin Peaks Investing podcast page, I put a link right at the top. So just click that link. It takes you straight through. If you want to do a donation, you don't have to. If you want to, just click it on there. Away you go. And the other thing is, thanks for all the retweets, because every time you retweet the podcast and spread the word around, that's brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, we've been really, really fortunate with people doing that, and it's great. I think one of the really crazy things that I've been finding and I've been chuckling at is the different countries that we're in. And I've read out a variety of different lists recently, but I think part of the reason why I end up reading them out is because I'm so proud that two little, you know, nobodies, one in Windsor and one in Leicestershire, I've got people listening in all these far-flung different places, you know. So yeah, thank you all, and just keep spreading the word and keep sharing the love of the Twin Peaks podcast. We're really, really pleased and thankful for having you listening to us.
Great stuff.
All right. Until we'll be back. We'll see you guys. We'll be after the UK budget. We'll be back in around the second weekish of March, people. So until then, please take care of yourselves. Please stay safe. Please do what you can for others. And above all, try and maintain your level of happiness and cognitive well-being as best as you possibly can. And the weather will get better, folks. And, you know, and things will get better, and we'll have more freedoms soon. You've done so well so fast, you know, despite it, and we're going to get out of this, and we're going to be able to share quality of time with our loved ones again soon. And you know what, Pete touched on this earlier, my mini boss, my daughter, she'll be going back to school on the 8th probably, and she's mixed about it in a sense of she's can't wait to for me to stop teaching her. I'm not good enough. But you know, she's not as excited as I thought she was going to be about going back. So hopefully, you know, things will improve once she gets back there. But until then, folks, just please look after yourselves, stay safe, and God bless. And thank you all for your support.
Thank you. Bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.